My name is Lisa Nicole, singer, songwriter, creator, realtor, lover of my cats and hiking, and well, I couldn't be here without coffee, and I'm your host of the Wild Hearts Podcast. Season 2 brings deep, heartfelt stories, inspiration, and education from guests based here in BC. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you kindly for listening. Now let's get to the show. Hey, you guys. Thanks again for coming back to listen to the podcast again this week. This is a topic that just bothers me and makes me so sad. And it's the stigma towards homeless people living on the streets, whether they're addicted to drugs, alcohol, or have mental health issues, or just choose to live outside. We don't know how they got there. We don't know what led them down that road or how they got there because some people make the choice to live outside. This conversation today was triggered by an occurrence I had with a man downtown. I see him all the time, and I was pretty sure I may have recognized him from high school. I see him in the corners, walking aimlessly and lost. And the other day, I was out for a run, and he was shooting up on the corner. I made a joke, and I said, "Looks fun," to the person that was running beside me. And I shouldn't have made that joke. It's not funny. These situations are horrendous. Fast forward in the day, I was pumping my gas, and he actually came up to me. How ironic. And he says to me the usual, "Hey, do you have any money?" I lied and said no, because I think I had a $5 bill in my wallet. We continued in conversation where he told me about his life. The hard part is knowing what was truth and what's lies. But he said his mother left him when he was 3 and he's been living on the streets all his life. I told him I thought I recognized him, and he said, "Yeah, we went to SH. That's our high school in Castlegar where we grew up." And he continued on that he was picked on along high school. And at one point I asked him, "Well, why don't you go get help?" And his reply was that he's tried to get counseling, but that people don't want to give him any help because of his name, etc. Anyways, our conversation ended with me saying to him, "Well, just don't give up. Don't give up on yourself." And I said that, I think, 2 or 3 times, and he walked away and said, "I already did." And I just wanted to scream, "No, no, no, no." It's so sad. I don't want you to give up on yourself. I don't want anyone to give up on themselves. And so I posted this on my Instagram story, and I get a ton of comments back on this topic. Some people are saying that, "Thanks for bringing this to my attention. It really is sad. And, you know, thanks for reminding me to be compassionate and more and less judgy to these people." But one in particular was from one of my friends, Kim Randon. Kim and I were friends in elementary school to start, and we had the same crush on the same boys. Not important. But Kim's currently in her 3rd year of nursing, and she mentioned that her nursing program in general spends time in street outreach weekly as part of their practicum. And she said how emotionally draining and how it's just a huge, overwhelming feeling of helplessness. She went on to tell me a few stories and give me information about some of this population that she met during her street outreach placement. So I invited Kim on the podcast today to talk about the negative stigma beyond the stereotypes and how we can help. Welcome, Kim.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. This is going to be a loaded topic. But why don't we start with you telling listeners a bit about yourself?
Yeah, it's a heavy one for sure. So I grew up in the area. Like most people, I moved away, but I loved the West Kootenays so much that it didn't make sense for me to force myself to live elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I'm a 3rd year nursing student through Selkirk College, and that bridges over to University of Victoria. I'm finishing my Bachelor of Science in Nursing and graduate in 2022. The program is great. It offers so many opportunities and experience. I've had practicum placements in Trail on medical and surgical, in Nelson on medical, in long-term care, and then in street outreach. I didn't realize it at the time, but the outreach placement was by far the most powerful and humbling experience.
Yeah. So the message you sent me were so compelling. And when we started talking more about this, you seemed invested in these people, like you really cared. So why don't you tell us about the street outreach? Why don't you tell us about the street outreach program? What was your role and how did you care for the people that you got to know?
I think the hardest part for me was having positive memories of the people that I met and then leaving my street outreach placement and finding that negative stereotype, whether it was like through Facebook or, you know, just in conversation. There's negative stigma around people living with addiction or people who live outside. I really do care. You know, the people I worked with are humans just like us. Mm-hmm. And the difference is that it's just easy for people to stereotype or judge or cast shame. But the truth is, that's just the lazy way of, right. of going about it. You know, the uneducated way.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is fighting a battle that we know nothing about.
Yeah.
Some people are just better at hiding it. For the folks living in that stereotypical presentation of living outside, it's just easier to see. During one of my conversations during outreach, I was grounded with a perspective of what is socially acceptable. The person that I was talking to said that he could just please society mm-hmm. by going and getting a job at Walmart stocking shelves.
Right.
But he loved art and music, and Aww. That's what he was passionate about. And
right,
yeah,
that's what you hear all that time,
know. Right?
People and say, why doesn't he just go work at McDonald's? They're hiring,
right? He could to please everybody else, or mm-hmm. he could do what he loves, and that doesn't bring steady income, but that brings him happiness,
right?
So, who is it to decide what he should be doing exactly. in his life? The Selkirk College Nursing Outreach Program provides students in year 3 of the BSN program, the opportunity to work with clients in various communities. Mm-hmm. You know, we work with people who have barriers associated with homelessness, addictions, or persuasive mental health challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Students work independently and in conjunction with other community service providers to help address health challenges they're experiencing. So whether that be wound care, foot care, blood pressure readings,
oh.
harm reduction, or even the support to help navigate somebody in the direction that they're asking for help in.
Right. Yeah, because you mentioned you did help someone get into like a detox.
Yeah.
And that it wasn't as easy as people think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mental health is slowly gaining more recognition on how important it is to maintain. If you had a broken ankle, you'd go and see a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But the negative stigma surrounding mental health supports are not readily acceptable.
Right.
So I'm not saying that everybody who lives outside or who lives with addiction has mental health or mental illness.
Right.
You know, I can't speak for everybody, but I can shed light on how hard it is to survive.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a full-time student for the last 3 years. And then before that, I was a part-time student while working for the 2 years before that.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a good saver. I've worked hard to save for school.
Mm-hmm.
As a dental assistant, we didn't have extended benefits.
Okay.
So I suffer from migraines, and I had a prescription that was almost $100 for 6 pills.
Holy.
So when I had a migraine, I had to decide whether I wanted to, like, if I could afford, you know, to take the pill that I needed to take.
Right. Or just suffer through the pain.
Or suffer through the pain.
Yeah.
So I would often save it for days that I had to go to work or be productive.
Yeah.
It's challenging. And then in August 2018, which was the August just before I started the nursing program, mm-hmm. I was diagnosed with kidney disease and hypertension.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so then I needed to, you know, this means that I need to take medication, and I've right. got doctor's appointments, and then other parameters to obtain my optimal health, which right. are like whole foods, you know, mm-hmm. a specific diet regime mm-hmm. that I need to, which isn't it's not cheap.
Yes. I feel like I know where you're going with this. Carry on.
So it is challenging, and I know that it's challenging, but I'm lucky enough to have the supports that I have, whether that's like government funding for yeah. a student loan. And now through the college, we have extended health benefits.
Oh,
I mean, you pay into it, but
okay. But still.
Yeah. And like, if I didn't have that student loan and the funding mm-hmm. supports mm-hmm. or the people who helped me get through this,
mm-hmm.
then I would be a lot closer to being that person on the street.
Right.
You know, and I think we're all closer to that than we think, because I didn't recognize that that would have been my reality.
Right.
I didn't think I would be that person, you know, some kind of health challenge that yeah. I need to navigate right. through life.
It's like we're a little bit more privileged.
Right.
We are. And we don't really always realize how good we have it.
Right.
And like what you touch on mental health, it costs so much to go to a therapist.
Right.
Or, you know, if you're going to go to a counselor, sometimes, you know, you don't always drive with them to the ones that are covered anyways by your medical.
I was going to say, yeah, exactly.
And so I've been going to a great lady that, you know, yeah, it's $120 every session, and I can't go every week. I would like to.
Right. And it's important, mm-hmm. you know, you need to have that communication, and it's just like a regular checkup with a doctor.
Exactly.
I don't know what led each person to live in their lower socioeconomic situation, but I recognize how easy it is to land in that circumstance. I'm just fortunate to have the right supports mm-hmm. at the right times.
Right.
Some barriers for folks living outside have only become more challenging since the pandemic, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the places that they would have had access to have either closed, or they have decreased hours of service or limited amount of people mm-hmm. able to access at any one time due to the distancing requirements.
Right.
There's no easy or free access to showers or laundry, let alone bathrooms, any place to wash yeah. people's hands, or, you know, any warm, safe spaces.
Yeah.
Something that, you know, we can come home to and have that luxury.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a significant increase in the incidence of overdose deaths in BC since COVID. you know, and people are just more isolated and forced to live in the background.
Mm-hmm. So sad.
Yeah.
On the topic of the jobs, I wonder what do you think if they were to walk into a McDonald's, you know, with an application?
Well, I mean, that's challenging because then they immediately get stereotyped and judged, right? Yeah. Like they don't have anywhere to wash their clothes or wash exactly. themselves. So they walk in wanting to get a job, not having access to being clean, to be yes. presentable, you know, that is often like required right. as you go to apply for a job.
Yeah, exactly.
But then they don't get a job because of how they look, but then mm-hmm. they can't look different because they don't have the financial means to, like, it's just a perpetuating cycle of
right.
not being able to have that access.
Yeah. And it's like, can I use your bathroom to clean up? And
then right.
come up with a resume.
By the way, I'm yeah. here for this job. Yeah.
It's, yeah. So why don't you tell us a few stories of the people you have met and how they live, how people treat them, and how they even get by day to day.
So I remember this one story specifically. It broke my heart. It was with someone who I was getting to know over the last few weeks of the outreach placement. We saw him, me and my two classmates. We were in a group doing the outreach together.
And was this in Nelson?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. My placement was in Nelson. And so we saw him in the morning and he looked a little bit off. He just, mm-hmm. you could tell that he was just, his energy, his whole vibe was just, you know, different from the previous times that we've seen him.
Oh.
And he was feeling quite low. So we sat with him and we just chatted and kind of just acted as a sounding board as he wanted to, you know, express what he needed to. And through this conversation, he shared, you know, how low he felt of himself and how he didn't feel like he was worth anything and just was feeling so broken, it seemed. Mm-hmm. He then, through this same experience or through the same time that he was telling us the story, he expressed the other day that he was walking down the street mm-hmm. and somebody spit on him.
Oh my God.
And then they said a whole bunch of really hurtful things, which wow. I don't care who you are. You don't deserve that. Like no. nobody deserves that. And it just simultaneously infuriates me and breaks my heart because mm-hmm. he's a human. The people that you see living outside and that you want to stigmatize and judge, even though you don't know them, like they're still somebody's loved one. Like
yeah.
they're someone's brother or sister or dad yeah. or somebody. Like they've been somewhere. There is somebody who loves them.
I know. I couldn't imagine if I had a sister or my dad or something like that on right. the street and people spitting on them. And
we come from a community, a small community where people are supposed to support each other and right. love each other. We don't even have that support from the community, mm-hmm. you know, for people living a little bit less than what society accepts. So mm-hmm. it's not fair. It shatters my heart.
Mm-hmm.
The negative stigma is so disheartening. And I'm not dismissing anybody else's experience, but that was just one that, you know, sat with me and made me really open my eyes to what our community mm-hmm. lacks in supporting our fellow community members.
Yes.
It's people interesting.
We went to high school with.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's so interesting. And it's interesting walking the streets with our big backpacks. We have like street outreach signs.
Okay.
That say we're Selkirk College street outreach.
Okay, cool.
I've never had any bad experiences with community accepting us, but I think that's also mm-hmm. due to previous nursing years, you know, paving that way for us. We have that presence in the community yeah. and I think it's just we have that presence there and we're just part of it.
And so are they pretty accepting of you guys coming around? And
yeah, like the people that we help. I was a little bit nervous going in just because it's the unknown, but
yeah, but that's all they have.
It's not. Okay. There has been several times where I've been like chatting with somebody and other people come up and they call them by name and
yeah.
you know, they're on their way to go do something, but they're like, oh, I'm just like, can I grab you a coffee? Like, what do you want? And then they'll just pop into a place close by and yeah. bring something out for them. And so yeah. it's, you know, they're people of the community that are just that, like they are right. the community. They are that yeah. person. Like every time I go back to Nelson, I want to chat with the people that I, you know, like yeah. they're like my buddies and
yeah.
I care for them and I want them to, you know, have their own happiness uh-huh. in whatever way that may look.
Like, so, do you remember, I always used to see a guy in Kaskar, an older man. He always was on the streets walking around. He was super tanned. He always had a backpack or whatever. I don't know what his name was. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. His eyes are beautiful.
Yeah. Like he's, yeah. He's a good looking guy.
Yeah. And he's really friendly. Like I don't have much experience, you know, chatting with him.
But yeah. So I've always been curious, like, what his story was. You know, I am curious about everyone. I just want to talk to them. And
I don't discourage that. I think if you are interested in, you know, with whatever, just do it with somebody.
Right.
You know, if you're feeling safe, but it's daylight and, you know, if you see them in the morning or the daytime, like it's fairly, just approach them. Just say hi. And if they're not feeling it, but like anybody, you know, like sometimes I don't want to talk to people. So yes. I just look the other way, you know, but just say hi.
Yeah. And it's just like, say hi, how are you?
They're just people. Yeah, it's exactly. Like how you know, if I saw you.
Yeah.
Be like, hey, Lisa, how's it
going?
Trying
to make a friend.
Yeah. And like. That you just communicate, you know? So it's not as scary, and it's not like this population lives by different standards, you know? They communicate.
They're just humans.
Like anybody would, yeah. So just ask them how they're doing. So essentially our day would be like a mapped out route. We would typically follow like a specific route of Nelson, find specific people that we knew would often be like in that route and follow up with the needs that they've requested from the day before or whatever it may be. So we would just stop and check in. So we'd pass out all kinds of things, but a lot of the time it was kind of just like hanging out with friends.
Yeah.
And we would follow up with their needs, but then we would chat.
Yeah.
Just like friends do.
Cute.
You know, sometimes we would be asked to help with things that were out of our scope or just simply out of our knowledge realm, such as helping somebody get into detox.
Right.
Or for helping somebody get into detox. For that, we would heavily rely on our instructor, Rob.
Yeah.
Or the hired street outreach in Nelson. So I don't know if Cascar or Trail has like a street outreach that is paid to be there, but Nelson does. Right. And they're a really great team and they're so lovely. As well as other partners such as the Nelson Committee on Homelessness or the Salvation Army. They've always been really supportive and really great.
I often see we have this one alley and trail, and I often see police down there. And then also sometimes I see a white and red truck. I don't know what it is.
Okay. I know that Trail started implementing a service for food.
Okay.
Offered to people. Yeah.
It's in the evenings too. It does look like kind of like a food truck, but
yeah,
I'm kind of curious about that too.
Yeah. So I think it is. I think it's the food truck.
Yeah. Cause like they're just, like we said, they're just human beings like everyone else. And I love what you said when we were chatting on Instagram. I actually got goosebumps reading it, and I'm getting goosebumps during this whole conversation. You said addiction or living outside is just part of them, and it's not what defines them. It's a powerful statement.
Yeah. And to kind of just comprehend, because a lot of times it's easy to just throw that stigma on somebody or stereotype or judge, you know, but that's not any different than racism or something in a sense. You know what I mean? Like you want to judge and hold this opinion on somebody when you don't know them, and it's not fair.
Yeah.
Some of the deepest conversations I've shared with people were folks from the outreach placement. And you don't get a lot of those deep conversations that really like make you think and perpetuate this like grander scheme of like thinking. And it's not conspiracy. It's not like all of these things that people want to, again, place that judgment on. They were just like wholeheartedly just like concepts about life. And it was so powerful. And I just loved it. But there are a lot of barriers for people to seek out and maintain, you know, that detox, or better yet, the withdrawal management or addiction supports and counseling. Kind of just worded a bit better than saying rehab and detox. Those often have that negative stigma to it.
Yeah.
But timing is always an issue. Often you need to be abstinent for a span of time before admission, right? So most long-term support programs are in much larger centers, requiring these folks from these small communities to move away, which isn't always an option. Like sometimes that's a good thing, but not always, because that's your life. That's,
you mean, you like to get to the things. Detox
or? Like in a longer span of support, then they have to move somewhere to a larger center where they can they can stay for longer, whereas the ones here, to my understanding, aren't like long-term facilities. And so that's challenging, because that would be like picking you up and throwing you somewhere else where you have no sense of community, you don't know anybody, potentially, and
no support. Or if you don't have money to eat, how are they gonna have money to get down there or wherever they're going?
Exactly. So it's really challenging. And there are wait lists. When I was working in the street outreach placement, I was working with somebody who wanted to go. It was the morning one day, and he wanted to go. He expressed that he wanted to go. I felt it. I felt the energy, and he was ready, but that couldn't happen right then, you know? And if they want to do it and make that change, like, you can't wait 3 or 4 weeks. You have to do it now. And
when they're really in it.
Right. They're in that mindset. Just like me, if I want to work out or go for a walk, I need to do it now, because I'm not going to want to do it if I push it off. Right. Yeah, like, it's silly to compare, but it's kind of the same thing.
It's real. So we have pretty harsh winters here in the Coonies. It can get as cold as minus 15 Celsius. I think averaging around minus 5, but I get cold at plus 5. So I couldn't imagine how someone can survive during our winters. Do you know how they survive, or do a lot not?
Yeah, it's hard. So my placement landed right over the cold snap that we had in December. Yeah. It was really cold. I couldn't help but think about everyone living outside when I finished my day and went home and sat in my heated house.
Aww.
I even felt a bit guilty to be able to enjoy that hot shower after my shift. You know, it's tough. I spoke to one person and asked how they stay warm at night or what they do. And he said that a lot of times they don't sleep through it. Like they don't go to bed at 11 and wake up at 7 like, you know, most people do and or, you know, assumed most people do who have a home. They have to move around and, you know, stimulate that circulation. They don't get a full night's sleep.
No.
And there was another person I was talking to who said that they sometimes seek out the ATM lobby of a bank just because you can often go in and, you know, if you want to go use your ATM at 12, you know, the bank doesn't have to be open. So that just kind of being in that little lobby breaks that wind and breaks that chill so that he could at least, you know, sleep for a couple hours until, you know, he got kicked out or something.
Right. Because I was going to say there's got to be security or cameras waiting to kick them out.
Right. And it's hard because I feel like I'm rooting for him and I'm like, yeah, that's great. That's a great opportunity, great option for you to go and find warmth. But then at the same time, like my unconscious bias also recognizes that if I went to go use the bank machine at a certain amount of time, whatever time of day, and this person was sleeping in there, I wouldn't use it. But
or you'd feel uncomfortable.
Right. I would feel uncomfortable. And I mean, it's hard. I want everybody to be safe. And I'm not at all saying that you should go out and like, oh, just be friends with everybody, because it's not. That's not real. That's not reality.
That's probably why you see a lot of them sleeping during the day, because maybe the sun's shining.
Right.
So they get a little more warmth at that time, too.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too. On one of the days that I was out, it was a beautiful day. It was so sunny, so warm, especially like I mentioned, the cold snap in December. And it was just such a nice, like it just felt so good.
Yeah.
You could feel it. It just warmed you to your bones. And everybody was positive. Everybody had, aww, you know, good energy. And it just, you could tell compared to a rainy day or a wet day or an icy, snowy day.
Yeah.
You didn't see anybody because they were just trying to find shelter, trying to be warm, which, you know, ultimately affects then their sense of community and their communication with their friends and stuff. Yeah. And they're isolated. So
people often give homeless people food. They think, why would we give them money so they can go buy more drugs, right? And I just think back to the topic that they are humans. What if, for one, they're not addicted to drugs or alcohol and they want money to buy food? What if you hand them a cheeseburger and they're vegan or they're allergic to gluten? I mean, what if they're allergic to bananas? Many people want to help them in those small ways. Like I said earlier myself, I didn't give that guy my $5 I had in my wallet. I myself am guilty of that. And as I've been researching this, I heard a guy speaking on how he was given 15 McDonald's cheeseburgers in a day, but he just wanted some money to buy a toothbrush. Yeah. How does the general public navigate that? Give them something. Don't give them anything. Give them money. Give them food.
So giving somebody an unsolicited sandwich is paramount to telling them what you think is best for them.
Mm-hmm.
Like you say, like not wanting to give them money because they might make the wrong decision.
Yeah.
Is very disempowering.
Yeah.
So they're going to find a way to feed their addiction regardless.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Whether you give them a sandwich or not, or you give them money or not. Like it's not like people who...
It's not like you're enabling them.
Right. Because they're going to do it. Exactly. So addiction is a disease. It's not a choice. And you raise several great points.
Mm-hmm.
It's still very kind and generous for folks wanting to give people food. But you're right. Like sometimes they're lacking those basics.
Yeah.
I would want a toothbrush. You know? And like a lot of times they just don't have that. Like you say.
Or like a face cloth.
Right. I worked with someone who was living outside who was vegan, and it was hard for them to find that food security.
Right.
So I spoke to the soup kitchens that we had connections with and just tried to find out a little bit more on how I could offer them, because they'll have a vegetable soup, but then it has, you know, something in it that
chicken stock
or even butter, you know, vegan is such a
specialized.
Yeah. Specialized way of eating. And a lot of people just don't know what that means, especially if they're not.
They're just volunteers, maybe.
Yeah, right? Exactly. They're all volunteers, which is great. And it's so, they do such amazing work. And, you know, they have this community with these, you know, people that they work with. And it's great. But just that lack of knowledge around their food is tricky. I wouldn't let that discourage anyone who felt inclined to share food. You know, they have friends who need food, too. So if somebody is allergic to a banana or doesn't want the 15th McDonald's hamburger. Like, they, you know, yeah. maybe they know somebody who can
or, yeah, true.
Have it or whatever. But if you're going to spend that money, if you're going to spend $8 or $5, right. like, give them the money. Let them decide what they want to do with it. If they need a toothbrush or if they need underwear, exactly. like, they can put that money towards what they need,
yeah.
not what you think they need.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to discourage people from wanting to help. Like, I don't want yeah. this to be a barrier for people who want to help.
Yeah.
But maybe just finding feedback, maybe chatting with somebody and then yeah. going out and doing the work and then coming back. Like, if you find yeah. out somebody's vegan, be like, oh, you know what? Let's go get like a bag of dried fruit or like right. some fresh produce or something mm-hmm. like that. Like, there are ways that you can go about it to help mm-hmm. them as well. I would like to also highlight what Selkirk College nursing students do mm-hmm. to help mitigate those barriers. When we walk through the communities, whether it be Nelson, Castlegar, or Trail, we have the backpacks full yeah. of all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So there's like harm reduction or wound care supplies, the blood pressure cuff, thermometers, masks. Sometimes we have socks or underwear, mm-hmm. toothbrushes, soap, shampoos, vitamins, granola bars, nice. Like all kinds of things. But even granola bars, like those are tricky because sometimes they have milk in it or nuts yeah, or even. Nuts. And then Boost has been a big one too because yeah. it's that. That nutritional drink yeah. for people, but that's milk based. Mm-hmm. So that's challenging
right.
as well. But it's essentially a Mary Poppins bag. Like, there's yeah. so many things in there that we carry. Aww. And it's often all based on donations. So
right.
there was a really good relationship that we had with, you know, some of the stores in Nelson, the grocery stores that would donate whatever they could. Mm-hmm. And the Salvation Army there, they were really great. When I needed some vegan specific stuff, mm-hmm. they had their little stock room and they helped yeah. me get that stuff to the people that needed it. So it was really great. Well, this population doesn't have a lot of control over their lives.
Right.
You know, at the best of time. And although it's well-meaning.
So do you think someone like myself, for instance, could just load up a backpack of a bunch of stuff? Of course, like you said, daylight with someone else for your safety. But just load up a backpack of random things and just like, what do you guys need? Who needs a toothbrush?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I don't see why
it's not bad.
That wouldn't be a bad thing. Yeah. And if you're going to ask them what they need or what you can do to help them,
yeah.
having just some of those basics would be great. Like, we were so short supplied on men's like socks, like just yeah. thick socks
yeah.
and large men's gloves. Like, in yeah. winter, you're just cold all the time, whether, you know, your hands are almost always exposed, and yeah. we never had men's large gloves.
Aw.
Yeah.
And they're expensive.
So expensive.
Yeah.
There was one guy that I was working with, and again, through that cold snap, and, you know, he got a little bit wet. His feet got wet. He didn't have good shoes, didn't mm-hmm. have dry socks, and yeah. he ended up getting frostbite. And aww. So he was living outside, and then he was able to get a bed in a shelter.
Yeah.
So we were able to go and help him, but he still needed services after. You of can't course. Just tell somebody they have frostbite and then expect them to be fine. Like,
yeah.
he was debilitated. He couldn't even walk, aww. And he needed routine
care,
wound care,
right?
And it's just hard because for somebody who can't find those services or even, you know, go into our healthcare system and get unstigmatized healthcare,
mm-hmm.
it's hard for somebody to live to like have their best outcome.
Since we live in Canada, we're very lucky with our healthcare system, so they can just walk into a hospital and get
yeah.
care.
Oh, that's a whole yeah. Oh. So they can, yeah, you're right. And Canada, like, it is free. We do get healthcare for mm-hmm. free. But again, like, my medications weren't free, and
right.
you know, my diet and stuff like that, how I'm supposed to live to my optimal health isn't yes. free. So I'm not saying that the person dealing with frostbite wasn't able to get the care.
Right.
But a lot of times, and maybe it's unconscious bias of the healthcare workers, but somebody goes in and sometimes they'll get labeled as drug seeking or something. If they're oh. in pain, frostbite, I'm sure, isn't
right
something easy right. to deal with.
But maybe they're just saying they have
right pain. Whether it's like chronic pain in their back or their knee or
right.
whatever it may be, to be labeled that way and then to come in and try and seek healthcare for yeah. frostbite or anything else, you know, mm-hmm. you get discharged from the hospital after mm-hmm. without any type of pain medication. Well, then they have to go and find their own route of trying to mitigate that pain that they're dealing yeah. with, right?
Right?
So it is challenging. And I'm not saying that our hospitals aren't giving appropriate care.
Yeah.
But it looks very different on the inside of a hospital than it does in that person's living circumstance mm-hmm. and what they have availability to.
It's those simple things in life, I feel like, we take for mm-hmm. granted, really. And yeah, washing your hands, going to the hospital, getting medication. Like we said, I bet they just try to go use a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
But especially with COVID now, not even I can go use a bathroom.
Right.
You know, and they get turned away. So where do they clean up? Like, where do they use a bathroom? Especially now. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. COVID has made it definitely impossible. even more so now. You're right. This is such a challenging aspect to navigate. WHO, World Health Organization, encourages mm-hmm. people to constantly wash their hands. But yeah. that's not attainable for the folks living outside who don't even have access to water, never mind warm water. Yeah. So how are they supposed to wash their hands? Mm-hmm. Nelson also has an outdoor toilet available on right. the corner of Baker Street and Hall that's Street. Right. One of the folks that I was speaking to kind of just mentioned too that, you know, he uses that washroom, but often finds that people go in there to do drugs. And right. so then there's sometimes drug paraphernalia left behind. Maybe what we could be looking at is more readily available sharps containers instead of trying to then discourage people from doing it at all. Right. Maybe we just have safer parameters of
right, like in that bathroom.
How they can do it. Exactly. Yeah. Have one in the bathroom. Have maybe one on every second street corner or whatever like the, right. the hot spots are that they're often found. Right now, there are some changes and unknowns around the Anchors supervised site that's in Nelson. So you can go there and do like safe injection site. It's supervised.
Okay.
The hours and access are issues for right. for people, especially right now with COVID and limited space and yeah. everything else. So the physical space and safety are challenging
yeah.
in most communities, but I think it needs to be looked at from a larger perspective.
Right.
So not just the needs of supervised consumption sites, which are important, but it's not the whole solution.
Yeah.
So as long as addiction and substance use are seen as criminal activities, it'll remain in the shadows
mm-hmm.
and need to be hidden in the back alleys or in the restrooms or behind closed mm-hmm. doors in homes, which is where the vast majority of overdoses in BC are happening. In private residences.
Really?
So they're trying to hide it. Yeah.
Like in
a home. People are just trying to, you know, not everybody who has an addiction yeah. is homeless, right? And not everybody that you see on the street is homeless either. Like sometimes right. they have like an affordable housing situation mm-hmm. or something like that. That's just one of the many yeah. layers of, you know, the judgment that gets placed. But yeah, the toxic drug supply has made this worse.
And like when we touched on a little bit about shelters, do you know how they get into shelters and how that works? Like, is it like, oh, you get one night? Do they rotate people or how does that work?
I know very little about like the workings of how it works.
Yeah.
The one that I'm familiar with, I think they can stay up for 30 days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There's sometimes like very strict rules and yeah. so they can get kicked out. That's
another can of worms.
Yeah. That's a whole other.
Well, I just think we have a bit of a problem here and in our society, people don't think it can be solved. And you mentioned in our conversation earlier that focusing on harm reduction is more supportive rather than believing that eradication is the answer. Addiction will never go away, so we need to comply with an agenda that fits their needs, not our needs being forced on them. Can you touch more on what you mean by harm reduction rather than eradication?
Mm-hmm. So if you look at addiction as a broader term that extends beyond illicit substances like mm-hmm. alcohol, nicotine, screens, phones, TVs,
right.
like chocolate even, you know, for some people.
We know that one.
Or even like fitness or yeah. like it's endless.
Yeah.
You know, those are all addictions. So how realistic is it to eradicate any of that?
Yes.
Right? So seatbelts are harm reduction. Driving a motor vehicle is inherently dangerous. So should the goal be to eradicate driving or just bad right. drivers?
Right.
Harm reduction is about reducing the associated harm. So by providing Narcan, which is naloxone, for toxicity or supplies for infection, bloodborne disease, they're all part of that. What's causing the greatest harm is stigma, moral judgment, or prejudice. All things that can increase marginalization, mm-hmm. isolation, and vulnerability.
Yeah.
So I'd argue that nurses and student nurses can actively participate in reducing those harms as well, yeah. right? The greatest gift that we get from working with the outreach program is getting to know these folks and to hear their stories and appreciate who they are as members of our community.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to know their lived experiences underline the importance of things that we learn in nursing school, like the social determinants of health, the importance of relationship building and trust as it pertains to knowing this person and how to mm-hmm. best ally with people to improve their overall health.
Right. Yeah. Well, wow. Thank you for doing this today. It was awesome. And if you can just end with a little recap of, you know, just a couple things, what people can do to help and where they can start.
I think just checking in with yourself, you know, if you're driving down the street and you see somebody that may be sitting on the sidewalk, like don't think the worst. Just like right. remember that they're all humans. And yeah. I'm not trying to stand up for everybody. Like, I know that there's people who steal and whatever, but that's not the people who live outside or people living with addiction aren't just the people who steal. Like, people who live in homes also steal. And, you know, that alone can be an addiction just for somebody who wants to steal. So, just be patient, check in with yourself. And if you want to help, I highly encourage it. There's, you know, services around the communities in Trail, Nelson and Castlegar where the community can get involved to help if you want to, you know, participate and cook a meal for the truck down here or in Castlegar or whatever. You know, there are those opportunities. Or ask somebody what they want. If you have a half an hour and you say, hey, you know, I'm running over here, can I get you something? Are you hungry? Like, what do you like? They have the right to choose as well. And I think ultimately, you know, just remember, I don't know, remember that they're a part of this society too. And, you know, they have that loved one.
And I think just to have a little more compassion around all of that and a little more kindness to that population.
Kindness goes a long way. And even though you don't think that it might, like, just smile, you know, smile at somebody, recognize them, acknowledge them. Like, I wouldn't say that people living outside or who live with addictions have depression. You know, people who live in homes or who seem happy also battle with things we know nothing about. So smiling goes a long way. Kindness goes a long way. And I don't think that it needs to be said just for that population. I think that can be, you know, universal.
It's like there's a girl in town, and I know her name is Crystal, and I see her walking all the time, and I know she's someone's sister, and I never say hi to her. I don't know.
I don't know them. I don't know, like, I can't say that if you're going to go have a conversation with somebody that it's going to go well. But I can't say that for somebody who you would, you know, anybody in the community. I can't promise it's going to go well. But just give them a chance. And if you say, hi, Crystal, and she tells you some things that aren't very inviting, then you know then. You know your boundaries, and you just don't say it. But say hi to, you know, John down the street or whatever next time you see him. Like, just acknowledge people and recognize that, you know, they want to be seen. They want that connection. And all we want is to feel loved and to be loved and to have that connection with our community and our society. And I think that goes a long way.
Well, thank you so much for coming over and chatting about this.
Yeah,
it was awesome. And your outreach program sounds amazing.
So good.
Yeah, I definitely want to get more involved in this. And I think this is just a first step for us. Yep. And I'm really
the iceberg.
I'm looking forward to learning more and hopefully getting more involved. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you have a moment to leave a review on whichever platform you're listening from, that would be awesome. And I would love to hear from you over on Instagram at Lisa Nicole Music. I'll see you next week.